Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe Diamond. I'm director of the Division of Community Corrections for the Department of Corrections. With me is Mike McAllister, who's director of the Division of Field Services, handling all probation and parole matters. Since I've distributed my official testimony, I will ad lib and be very brief. I will then make myself available to all those questions that I'm supposed to be asked based on other people's comments. Let me say first that Commissioner Wren expresses his regrets for not being here, but Division One of Finance has called him, and that's where he's been for all of yesterday and this afternoon. Let me also say that I agree with the majority of the testimony that came before me, particularly General Delaney's and former Speaker Sitek's. The department requests that you not eliminate the 9-month mandatory release to parole supervision, intensive supervision, for all the reasons stated. Public safety and costs are both well served by that, and all the research backs that up. We agree that some discretion ought to be given back to the parole board regarding the 90 days, because one size does not fit all in all instances. I will tell you, however, that that 90 days was not picked out of the air. It was not designed to be cute or clever or kind. The state of Kansas did a very thorough research and study. They compared 90-day sanctions and 180-day sanctions. They found absolutely no statistical difference in terms of recidivism. They decided, why pay for the extra 90 days of food, clothing, medical bills if we're not getting a difference? Having said that, the reason we are supporting some discretion being returned to the parole board is because we do want to create incentives for participation in treatment services. Very recent research that was reported last week by Dr. Ed Letessa, one of the nation's foremost criminologists, right here in New Hampshire. He's actually at the University of Cincinnati. He was here in New Hampshire when he reported it. Is beginning to identify what is referred to now as dosage. How many hours of structured interventions work best? And that number is somewhat north of 200 hours. So there are some people who are resistant, who are reluctant, who can get that extra incentive so that we can have that 200-hour structured for them. I do want to correct one bit of information that I suspect Representative Coffey either erred or was given wrong information. None of the 90-day parolees are in county facilities. They are in the North Country facility of the State Prison of New Hampshire. When you are violated for your parole, you go to prison at the North Country facility. There are people who are held pending hearings, pending trials, on other matters. But once your parole is violated, you go to the North Country facility of the New Hampshire State Prison. The reason this legislation and Senate Bill 500, as it's referred to, which is the Justice Reinvestment Act, is so important is because it is working. I wish I knew exactly why it's working even better than we expected this quickly. And I wish I could take credit for it personally. I can't. But our numbers are better than we expected them to be, and the crime rate has not changed. We expect it to be at 50 people less in our prison population as of this point, based on the passage of the bill. We are now over 150 people less. That 112 bedroom, if you will, that was the gym up in the North Country facility when we closed the Lakes Region facility, is now back to being a gym because we were able to reduce and manage our risk better. We had no choice. We had to have them there. But as a result of the process, which has been thorough, careful, and professional, we have that gym back for its proper use, and we don't have 100 criminals living in the same room almost 24 hours a day. It's not a very healthy way to be. That's no longer the case. This legislation is working. If we were 40 years down the road or 3 years down the road, I'd say it's working only because of this bill. Because we're only 1 year down the road, it's a little premature to say that. But I'd much rather be in a position to tell you that things are moving in the right direction than to be reporting to you that things are not. They absolutely are. There were several questions that were raised. There were several references to the fact that I might be able to answer them, or Mr. McAllister. I'll end my testimony since you've been patient with all of us and answer any questions you might have.
Representative, thank you. Mr. Gavin, could you tell me how many violators we've had in the past year?
How many parole violators?
Yes.
Do you know that number?
And
the average year has about 500 parole violations.
Right, but on the new sentencing, the new 500, on Senate Bill 500.
You mean that went into the 90-day program?
Right.
I don't have
We don't know that specific number. I can tell you that it's got to be less, because prison population is based on two things: length of sentence and number of people obviously coming in. So the number of people must be slowing down because we have less people in the prison. The sentences haven't changed, as General Delaney mentioned. The crime rate hasn't changed. So what's changing is the way they are being managed and treated. Now, again, Mr. Eckert is right. Some of them refuse to participate, and we need to create a way to get them to participate. But we'd be happy to get you that specific information.
But we've only, had Senate Bill 500 in place less than a year, not even close to a year. And from testimony I've been hearing here, it seems as though that a lot of violators, and I was just curious if there was, that 90-day period.
I can tell you one of the parts of Senate Bill 500, which is not part of this legislation, but it's a 7-day sanction that's available for pre-violation for a parole officer who wants to send somebody a strong message before violating them. We've probably had about 20 or 25, maybe 30 of those, of which the recidivism rate is less than 10%. In other words, of those, and again, it's early. I can't say this is true for 3 years running. But since those 30 that we've had, around 10 have been eventually violated. They came into the halfway house for the 7-day sanction, went back out on parole, and of that 30 or 35, around 10 have been eventually violated and had their parole violated.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good to see both of you here today. Let me ask a question that the Chair asked earlier of Mr. Dornan. I believe that originally there was $500,000 second chance grant to fund the program, and then $200,000 grants that came afterward. What is the methodology for funding the community treatment programs in the future?
Okay. There is actually a total of close to over $4 million in the state right now for reentry, all total, not all of it at the state. Some of it is various counties have gotten special grants. But again, that's short-term money. It's absolutely true. It's not going to be around forever. We know that. During the Senate Bill 500 discussions, we were asked to project savings. We identified that in the fifth year of this, assuming we were functioning for 5 years, we would reduce the prison population by somewhere around 500 people. At that point, in the initial savings, it's only the marginal cost that we reference here. Once you get to significant savings of hundreds of people. Keep in mind, the first 300 that we save, we get back to our appropriate population, because we were overpopulated by 300 as a result of closing Laconia. But we projected that we would save approximately $4.5 million once we reached our goal of prisoner reduction. And that's over 5 years, not tomorrow. The legislature made a statement in that bill of an intent to reinvest a portion of that saving. We are asking for approximately half of that saving, approximately $2.4 million. At the moment, between money that was reallocated in the department and some federal funds, the state has about, I would say, 1.6, 1.7. Those, as I mentioned, the federal funds are going to go away. We're hoping to time this and stage this in such a way that as the federal funds disappear, we will have shown our savings, we will continue the progress we've made thus far, which would then allow us to ask the legislature to reinvest a portion of the savings. That's obviously a policy decision that you folks have to make in the general court. All we can do is request it.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I would just like to make a couple comments. Thank you. I'm Michael McAllister, Director of Field Services for the Department of Corrections. I know some of you, and thank you for your time. I'll be brief here. I want to make a couple of quick comments to clarify some of the items that I heard today. There was a wide variety of discussion about a wide variety of topics, and I want to speak just basically towards the bill we're talking about. First of all, I want to make it clear that the 9 months mandatory supervision provision started October 1st of last year, and the Department of Corrections Division of Field Services was fully operational, had a policy in place, and has been providing proper supervision of all those individuals since that began. So we're not waiting to catch up with something. We've been doing it. Our officers are managing that population properly and providing proper supervision. So I wanted to clarify that point, first of all. Our caseload size varies from county to county. Our mission is to manage our caseload by risk, not by raw numbers. Our caseloads are not 200 per officer. In some areas, they are higher than we like. But again, our caseloads are managed by risk as opposed to raw numbers. There's a big difference there. Regarding services in the community, our probation parole officers have always provided services to our offenders and made referrals to all of the programs that do exist in the community, and they are offender funded. It is a debatable matter whether or not there are enough community services available or not, and I think the general consensus is we could use a lot more. We have received some federal grant money, as Mr. Diamond mentioned, that will provide additional resources for our parolees to help maintain them in the community, and we're hoping that additional resource will give us better outcomes, but it's too early to say on that issue. But our probation parole officers are making the referrals and ensuring the offenders under their supervision are being referred to and receiving the assistance they need, and when they become a risk that can no longer be managed in the community, we bring them to the attention of the parole board, who then either signs a warrant or does not sign a warrant, and if they sign a warrant, they go back before the board for a revocation hearing. And my last comment regarding our equipment needs, I've heard mention a couple times about state cars, the number of state cars we have. What I'll say is our job is to do as best we can with what the process gives us. We have equipment requests every biennium. We ask for equipment funding. And then in the end, whatever we receive is what we make do with, and that is what we do. If we could have 100 new cars, a little humor here after today, that'd be great if anybody was willing to entertain that, but certainly we all realize the fiscal reality and that's not going to happen. So we do have a fleet of vehicles throughout the state and our field offices to do our field work with. In some places, would we like more? Yes. Could they be newer? Yes. But again, we do the best we can with what we have. My last comment, Representative Panalakis asked, what has recidivism numbers been since SB 500 was implemented? I don't have the exact numbers, but they have remained relatively consistent from what they were previously. So there has not been a large spike up. There has not been a large drop down, but we will get you that actual data. And that concludes my testimony.
May I add one more piece on the financial side? Just before coming to this hearing, I received a copy of an email that was generated by the Justice Center, the Council on State Governments, in response to apparently a legislator's question. I'm not sure of all the details on it. To guesstimate what the cost, if these provisions in House Bill 524 were passed, or Senate Bill 52, which is very similar, what the cost impact would be. Their estimate, which I have not done a thorough analysis of yet, is that if we pass these, we will increase cost by $600,000. Based on what the current cost level. I just want to convey that information to you, and I'll be happy to make that information available to you.
We have 57 probation parole officers in the field, and then we have 11 supervisors or chief probation parole officers, some of whom carry a caseload, some of whom are strictly basically managers based on the size of their office, so that varies based on the size of the office.
They're not all assigned a vehicle, right?
No, ma'am. There's a number of vehicles, a vehicle or a number